Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai.
Two down, one to go. It's the Tuesday edition of Wisconsin's Midday News on WTMJ. Almost did the Wednesday edition again. I don't know why I'm a day ahead of myself here. I think I started the show saying it was Wednesday, October 28th.
Nobody remembers.
Yeah, well, good enough.
It's okay.
Oh, good enough. But it's Tuesday. I can certainly promise you that. A nice day today. Good fall conditions, 55 degrees and sunny at 2:10.
Here's your top two at two on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Number one, Hurricane Melissa makes landfall in Jamaica with sustained winds of 185 miles per hour. This makes it the strongest storm to hit that country since records started. Record keeping, Greg. When they first started, that was 174 years ago.
Oof.
The strongest storm to hit that country since we started keeping records. Melissa was also one of the strongest Atlantic storms ever recorded. Bridget and Wayne Todd are spending their honeymoon holed up in a resort in a grill. Wayne Todd says the restaurant helped them hunker down.
They've made sure to give us plenty of rations. We get plenty of water and food in our rooms. They've been bringing us meals.
How scary, though. He says they put mattresses and pillows against the balcony doors and windows to prevent any flying glass from hurting them.
We understand that you can only prepare as much as you can until the event happens and try to stay calm during the crisis.
So meteorologists are tracking this and figuring out where it's going next. Here's meteorologist Craig Allen.
Melissa was still intensifying right up through the very last minute with lightning flashing all around the core. I really can't begin to stress just how extremely dangerous and life-threatening this situation is.
So dangerous. And this is a storm so powerful that the experts are saying it will reshape Jamaica for years to come.
It's unbelievable that this entire island is going to be engulfed by this thing. There's nowhere to go. You are stuck, right? And airports have been closed here for a couple of days. There was a local business owner just watching the CNN coverage who was quoted as saying our shoreline is gone. And, you know, we talked about all the flooding here in August, and that was, you know, 14 inches, which was significant. It was paralyzing. And millions in damages. They could have 40 inches of rain in Jamaica.
Yeah. I mean, our flooding was horrendous, and obviously many families lost a lot in it, including homes in some cases and entire floors. But this is a different ballgame. I mean, you think about Jamaica and just how different the culture is there and everything around them. You have Jamaican officials right now telling people to keep an eye out for displaced crocodiles in the floodwaters. Yeah, it's bad. And the other thing, too, you've got meteorologists saying that the hurricane could strip trees bare. And at first I thought, well, sure, of course. I mean, we've seen the destruction and the damage that hurricanes have done in Florida. You know, they down trees and branches are down. But then I was thinking more about it. And if you're stripping trees in Jamaica, it's like the tropics. You're just, I mean, that visual of the tropics kind of having nothing left.
Yeah. Sad story here. 212 and WTMJ. Also be mindful of this. More than 40 million Americans who rely on federal food assistance face those benefits drying up in days with the government shutdown. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley introducing a bill to fund SNAP during the shutdown. ABC's Jay O'Brien from Capitol Hill.
Food pantries even popping up at airports across the country to help struggling TSA agents and air traffic controllers forced to work without pay. Nearly 11,000 air traffic controllers like Peter Lefevre missing their first full paycheck.
The prospect of going another pay period without pay is weighing on the minds of myself and all the people that I work with.
Pay stubs obtained by ABC News showing $0.
No permanent food pantry at Mitchell International, but temporary donation drives pop up from time to time for situations like this. It's kind of a scary situation. I don't know how this has impacted travel just yet. I haven't had a flight out of Mitchell. Might be an interesting thing to connect on and find out. But I know these sick-offs have happened where TSA employees have just decided, like, oh, you're not paying for me to be at work, then I'm going to not feel so good one of these days. It's happened before, but nonetheless, just the real-time issue here is that a couple of days without a paycheck, okay. A couple of weeks, a couple of months without a paycheck, significant issues could pop up here, and there is a bit of a deadline here at the end of the month.
Yeah, I was just talking with somebody at the airport yesterday, and they were saying that right now we're really not being impacted like some of the other larger airports are. I mean, I think it was Atlanta that I saw a couple days ago. Some of the lines to get through security were just insane. I mean, it looked more like the holidays. So we have not experienced that here in Milwaukee yet, but there are donation bins in Milwaukee set out to help these workers who aren't getting paid. And some of the other people are giving non-perishable food items and giving things like diapers just to help out where they can.
It's 2:14 on WTMJ. Another big story today, Amazon announcing a round of layoffs, about 14,000 people receiving the pink slip. What's behind it all? Part of our Tech Tuesday with Mike Dubusky after this.
It's Tech Tuesday with ABC News technology reporter Mike Dubusky.
We're not sure if he will be a judge in the upcoming AI beauty pageant, but he is our guest every Tuesday on Tech Tuesday.
The latest and greatest in the world of tech.
Tesla's next product, they call it a robo-taxi. These are AR glasses. They're called simply the Frame.
On Wisconsin's Midday News.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto, Domo. Domo.
It's a Tech Tuesday edition of Wisconsin's Midday News. Time for a weekly check-in with ABC tech expert. It's Mike Dubusky. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing great here. So Amazon just announcing today the reduction of workforce by about 14,000 roles. Some thought it would actually be more than this, but Amazon confirming today a pretty significant reduction, though the company appears to be doing very well, right? Some companies have corporate restructuring and they have to slice their workforce. Amazon's doing great, but they're still cutting. Why?
Yeah, well, if you listen to the leadership at Amazon, they say this all comes back to artificial intelligence. One of the representatives at Amazon, Beth Galetti, a senior vice president, basically said that they're making these cuts so that they can start to behave like the world's largest startup. That's their terminology there. And of course, this comes after multiple statements from Andy Jassy, the CEO of the company, who said that he sees a lot of the company as a potential to be run by artificial intelligence, specifically AI agents, which are specific brand of AI that can go out and do things and has agency for you. And they're part of a larger trend here in making these staff reductions. We also saw Target make some major cuts last week, about 1,800 people. Meta, Microsoft, Intel among them as well have all made major cuts this year. And this backdrop of artificial intelligence potentially coming in and filling in those gaps seems to be a big one, at least in the corporate world. The World Economic Forum guys found that about 40% of employers plan to reduce staff and replace them with artificial intelligence. But guys, every time we talk about AI, we have to talk about the potential for it to go wrong. Earlier this year, we found the MIT Research Lab came out and said that 95% of AI deployments, that is to say companies that have integrated AI into their workforce in some capacity, have failed to see any cost savings or increase in profits. So we are seemingly shifting around a lot of how we do work, a lot of, you know, staff reduction across the tech industry. We're not really seeing the results of that just yet, though.
This marks Amazon's second largest job cut since it slashed 22,000 jobs back in 2022. What do you think it ultimately means for Amazon's long-term focus?
I think it really does come back to this AI question. They want to see themselves as this sort of lean, nimble company that can, you know, pivot, you know, strategies depending on kind of the market winds. Obviously, we've seen a lot of uncertainty in the market as of late with regards to tariffs and inflation and the general sort of economic outlook. And I think that there's an impetus on these companies to reduce their staffing. The other piece of this, guys, is that Amazon went on this big hiring spree in the pandemic, hiring, you know, many, many thousands of workers. And many market analysts say that this is now a readjustment in sort of the post-pandemic era to something that is a little bit more in line with their strategy. But again, that's cold comfort to the 14,000 people who are going to be looking for jobs in the next few months here. This is not all happening at once. This is going to happen over the next few weeks and months, but it does amount to about a 4% reduction in Amazon's overall workforce.
ABC's Mike Dubusky joining us here on Wisconsin's Midday News. On Monday, Mike, OpenAI released some hard data here on how AI programs like ChatGPT are actually affecting public health. What were the findings?
Yeah, so these are some pretty eye-opening numbers, guys. And again, as you said, these are kind of the first hard data points that we have in this ongoing conversation around AI and mental health. What they found was that 0.07% of ChatGPT users experience potential signs of psychosis or mania. 0.15% of users have conversations that include explicit information indicators of potential suicidal planning or intent, and 0.15% again showed potential heightened levels of emotional attachment to ChatGPT. Those do sound like small percentages on their face, guys, but when you widen that out to the amount of people who actually use ChatGPT over the course of any given week, OpenAI estimates that's about 800 million people. That means that more than 500,000 people, by their own estimates, are showing signs of mania or psychosis. Nearly 2.5 million people are potentially expressing suicidal thoughts to the chatbot or talking to it over family members or friends.
This is really disturbing. Are there specific usage patterns, maybe how much time is spent on it or emotional dependence that seem to increase the risk?
Yeah, that's a big piece of this. All of the major AI companies that run chatbots like ChatGPT, Google, Anthropic among them, say that the longer you talk to these things, the less safe it's going to become, right? The safety guardrails start to collapse. The sort of guidelines around this sort of thing start to fall down. And they do have guardrails here. They do generally direct you to mental health resources if the chatbot senses that you're kind of going down a dark path, but that's an imperfect system as it is. So, yeah, there are certain patterns that they are trained to recognize and direct you around, but there are holes in that strategy. In addition to that, before we got yesterday report with this sort of harder data, we have been seeing an increase in deeply reported stories from the New York Times, Rolling Stone, ABC News, and others who have found, people actually on the receiving end of this, what it's like for the family members and the friends of people who are going through this AI psychosis. These are stories that are really dark, guys. People experiencing severe paranoia, delusions, other mental health crises, in extreme cases, going even further than that, cutting off communication with friends and family, people, disappearing or harming themselves and other people. OpenAI right now is being sued by the parents of a teenager who took his own life after having extended conversations with ChatGPT. Part of that conversation advised him to hide a noose so that others would not discover, that he was planning to, take his own life. And these, again, are just, underscore exactly how risky this technology is deployed at scale, given how new it is and how we haven't really gotten our heads around exactly some of the negative outcomes that can come from it.
Trying to spin a positive in the future here on something like this, I do wonder if in time those sort of questions and conversations with a chatbot might actually trigger some contact with a mental health professional, right? Taking you out of the computer world, but also linking you with someone who can help you through the process.
Yeah, and to a degree, they're designed to do that already if they're sensing that things are going south. But again, it's sort of an imperfect system. Every time we talk about generative AI, we have to talk about how it hallucinates, how it's imperfect, it doesn't give you consistent results. Now, OpenAI, for its part, does say that their latest technology has seen some major improvements in this regard. GPT-5, which is kind of the technology that undergirds ChatGPT. It is their core technology. It reduces undesired answers by between 40 and 50% compared to the last model, which is now more than a few months old. So they say they're making some progress. They've also consulted with 170 scientists, primary care physicians, and psychologists, who basically say that they don't always agree with what ChatGPT is saying with regards to mental health, but that it is better than it once was. Some critics of this data that was released on Monday, though, say that it's a little too narrow for what we were really trying to look at here. These are data points. What should we compare them to? Is this a problem that is increasing given how many people now use ChatGPT compared to 6 months ago or 2 years ago? Is it a problem that they're actually making progress on? What does ChatGPT's data sort of reveal as compared to Google's or Anthropic's or xAI's? These are all questions that I think remain to be answered. And I think that's something that you're going to see pressure from the critical space, in the future.
Yes, it does kind of make me wonder how much of this is unique to AI versus, say, what we saw with social media addiction years ago.
Sure. That's a big piece of this as well. I mean, obviously, they're very different technologies. And I think from the critics' perspective, many people say that these chatbots are designed to keep you on the platform, right? They have a vested interest in you using these tools, so they're going to try and do that, right? They're designed to be friendly. They're designed to be nice and funny. And that is great in a sort of short-form context, but longer form, this veers into what many have called sycophancy, right? Where these chatbots are designed to pump you up, to reinforce your thinking, even at the expense of reality and the truth. And especially when you couple that with people who have a history of mental health illness or, you know, a history of trauma in their past, as many of these stories have revealed, that, you know, is doubly dangerous.
ABC's Mike Dubusky, we appreciate it, Mike. Great information.
Thanks,
of course,
Mike.
Guys. Take care.
Some sad news to share out of Milwaukee's broadcast community. Former WISN 12 news anchor Jerry Taff has died. Taff joined Channel 12 back in 1979. He anchored for more than 25 years in Milwaukee before retiring in 2005. Taff became one of the most familiar and trusted faces in local news. Many of you will remember Jerry Taff for his signature sign-off. He ended the broadcast every night with this.
Good night, and better tomorrows.
You remember that, don't you?
I remember everything about him. There was something so stately about Jerry Taff. There was a level of professionalism that he carried. The hair was perfect. The suit always looked nice. And if he was covering it, you knew it was a big deal. Like, you had to watch the 10 o'clock news because of people like Jerry and his partner.
I remember watching Jerry and Kathy growing up. And joining us live now is Kathy Michaelby, Taff's longtime co-anchor and friend. Thank you so much for joining the program, Kathy.
Oh, I appreciate you guys inviting me to talk about Jerry today. You said it so beautifully. He was larger than life. The guy was absolutely a force.
Kathy, you sat next to Jerry for so many years. What comes to mind first when you think about him?
I got to know him on and off from your living rooms and your little box in the television set, and he was just about as delightful. You know, he always had a little something fun to say. He was the same he was on TV as he was in person, without some of the, you know, Greg, you were talking about how, you know, he was always so perfectly coiffed and this and that, not necessarily in person all the time, but he just had an amazing way to connect with people. And that was true on and off television.
Well, it definitely came through, and you always knew if Jerry was covering it, it was a big deal. That's what it felt like when I was watching Channel 12 growing up, Kathy, and it was international events in Cuba, things happening in Tel Aviv, major national political conventions, severe weather aftermath, standing beside a ball of rubble after a tornado had ripped through. If Jerry was on it, you knew it was a big deal.
I remember seeing him in a gas mask or something, you know, when he was in Tel Aviv, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this is local news. This guy can cover just about anything. His experiences in life prepared him for that. But boy, he certainly never showed any kind of fear in any kind of situation. He was ready to take on just about every challenge. Pretty incredible.
Trust in the media has changed so much over the years. I mean, it was a different ballgame decades ago. Why do you think, or what do you think, made Jerry so trusted by Milwaukee viewers all those years?
I got to believe it was that he wasn't a cookie cutter sort of person who was on television. He did it his way. He knew his stuff. He trusted people to do the research and make sure the story was right. But he always kind of put his touch on it. So I think that I was lucky to work with Jerry in my young days. I started at Channel 12 when I was about 25, 26 years old. I actually saw him on the air when I was working at this little fledgling news operation at Channel 18. And I turned on the television and I couldn't believe my eyes that he was in Paris with Kevin Hermanning's mother during the 444 days of hostage keeping in Iran.
Wow.
He was helping her kind of navigate the opportunity for a mom to try to beg for the release of these hostages. He was just a guy who was willing to put himself in the middle of just about anything.
Oh, go ahead now, Kathy. Please
finish. No, you go ahead. This is how I've been. These conversations are going on all over the place in Milwaukee. Everywhere I go, no matter what, you know, people will usually, they don't necessarily recognize me because I never look exactly like I looked on television or whatever. But the second they know that it's me, they'll go, oh my gosh, have you talked to Jerry? How is Jerry? Jerry was like, he was invited into people's homes.
You know, you did a sit-down with him not too long ago, and I think he was in his mid-70s, perhaps, at the time. He passed away at the age of 85. Was he ever battling anything? Was he ever upfront or open with you about anything?
Absolutely.
Or was he pretty healthy up to his last few days?
His health was failing, and there's no doubt about it. One of the latest, we kept, we were email pen pals, and I don't think he'd mind that I'd say that he was taking on a lot of tough battles, you know, from cancer to, he thought he was losing his memory, but my God, he was as sharp as could possibly be. I mean, I defied him on that one. But he said one time after one kind of operation he had to have, he said something like, "I feel like a cool watermelon at a hot Texas picnic. They split me right open, and I've got a heel, and you know what? Just thank goodness I'm going to," because that's, you know, that, I'm paraphrasing him here.
Sure.
But he just had a sense of reality and humor, and I don't know, better tomorrows about himself. It wasn't just his sign-off. It was kind of his mantra and his outlook on life.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I mentioned that off the top, that memorable line, his signature sign-off, good night and better tomorrows. Mm-hmm. Do you know exactly where that came from, and what do you think it said about him?
Well, it's one of those things that when a person's gone, you're like, why didn't I ask where that better tomorrows thing came from? I think it came from his heart. That's it. I've never asked him. I will say it was something that you could rely on every night when you were doing the news. You never had to come up with some clever little ending for the news, because you just knew that Jerry was going to be there and he was going to say that. And you never took it lightly. He didn't take it lightly. I think if you were to string a bunch of those sign-offs together, you would see that Jerry just kind of had a different nuance, you know, most of the time. It was the way he lived.
Good night and better tomorrows. Good night and better tomorrows. Good night and better tomorrows.
Yeah, each one just a little slightly different. You're right, Kathy. You talk about trust, and, you know, growing up watching the news here locally, you had the 5 o'clock news, you had the 6 o'clock news, you had the 10 o'clock news, and I think Channel 18 or 24 maybe did the 9 o'clock news.
That's
after
right.
The Ropers or Three's Company, if I'm remembering accurately. But nonetheless, this is how people consumed their news throughout the day, 5, 6, and 10. Dinner time, before dinner time, dinner time, and then, of course, the 10 o'clock news, and that was everything. The 10 o'clock news was everything, Kathy. People consume their news in so many different ways now, and the 10 o'clock news is not what it once was. And there are so many great people still doing the news, but I think that's part of what endeared the community to people like you and to Jerry and Mike Goucher and Melody Wilson and other names that come to the top of my mind, is that you were in our homes telling us the most important things about the day at the only time that we really consumed it, and it was, okay, shut the TV off and go to bed. You were the last people we saw before we shut our eyes.
Probably not the worst thing to do is to try to make appointment television for yourself. You can do it yourself, because it's, you know, you can pick your time these days as to when you're going to listen to the news and where you're going to listen to the news. But I make sure that I listen to the news or watch something daily. I can't get away from it. But I just thought of something that I think made Jerry and you guys, and I will say a little bit about me, because we're radio people. When you're involved in radio and you have to somehow or other communicate with people, you don't have that benefit of necessarily seeing them. They don't get to see you. But you do have to put your all into it. And that's, I think that his radio training was one of the best things that he ever had as far as jumping into television.
And now, gosh, we're on YouTube, Kathy, and reeling, and unfortunately our faces are over.
Oh, my gosh, that would drive me. I think that would drive me insane.
You gotta wear pants.
I don't
now
know. Oh gosh. I'm not on, because I'm just on the telephone, but lo and behold, you really are under the microscope. Jerry was he was his own guy, and I don't know if he thought it was going to work out in Milwaukee, but I think he was as delighted as anyone that a guy from Texas moved into the Milwaukee market and just took it by storm.
Yeah, he certainly did. If you could say one more thing to Jerry, Kathy, what would it be?
Where'd you come up with it? Better tomorrows.
Oh, yeah. See, there you go.
One of those, but I would just say, you can't just say one more thing to Jerry Taft. It would be an ongoing conversation forever and ever and ever.
Isn't that the truth? I'm so delighted
that I got to work with him. And I'm having a lovely time talking with people about having, you know, spend some quality time in Milwaukee and on Milwaukee television and really doing it because we really love the community.
And Kathy, real quickly here, I know I reached out to you to talk about Jerry, but I know we have a lot of fans who are wondering, what is Kathy Michael be up to? So can you just give our fans a quick little synopsis of how you're doing today?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. I have a very rich friend life. I've got so many people that I just can't even figure out how to see everybody all the time. My husband did pass away about 2 years ago. Jerry was a dear in helping me deal with that passing. But I have, I'm spending every day just looking at life like, heck, I hate to do it, but I'm going to say like, there's going to be better tomorrows. It's my mantra now.
Thank you so much, Kathy, for joining us and sharing your memories. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
That's retired WISN 12 News anchor Kathy Michaelby remembering her longtime co-anchor Jerry Taft, a trusted voice in Milwaukee news for more than two decades.
Good night and better tomorrows.
Good night and better tomorrows.
Good night and better tomorrows.
Wrapping up Wisconsin's Midday News for a Tuesday. Back again tomorrow until 3 o'clock. John Mercure coming in next with Wisconsin's Afternoon News. Our podcast built by Sadek Unlimited. Sign up and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We'll be keeping an eye on the hurricane here as it continues to hammer down on Jamaica. When I say Jamaica, I mean all of it, right? It's going to hit the eastern portion of Cuba, but all of Jamaica right in the path of Hurricane Melissa, with wind speeds anywhere from 185 to 220 miles per hour, sustained wind speeds. It looks like a whiteout from some of the recent videos that we've seen on social media. So devastating storm hitting the island of Jamaica here, at least through today and the rest of tomorrow. Expect another day or so of damaging winds and just severe catastrophic damage.
Yeah, made landfall near New Hope, Jamaica as a Cat 5 storm. It is just the second Atlantic storm to ever make landfall with winds as fast as 185 miles per hour.
Well, hoping for the best here for the folks in Jamaica and anybody in its path. 2:56 news coming up. It's Wisconsin's Afternoon News in just a few.